I'm not a physicist, and it's slightly important to point that out. We live at a time on this planet when three great religions are under pressure. In the United States, we have fundamentalists, champions of intelligent design, at odds with evolution and Darwinism. We have also Islam caught up in terrorism. And thirdly, we have Judaism fighting for its very survival. We are also at a time when science is in disarray with its physics, as we shall soon see. And at a time, too, when philosophy churning out its PhDs again and again, but still not able to answer five great questions that have pestered man down through the centuries. You know what these questions are. They are not addressed by the universities. They are not addressed by the philosophers, nor by the scientists. Firstly, who are we here on Earth? On this tiny planet, like a grain of sand on all the Saharas of the universe, who are we? Secondly, where do we come from? How did we get here? No answers. And thirdly, why are we here? As we grow in stature, as we grow spiritually, we have to ask ourselves, why are we on this tiny planet in the circumstances that I've described? Fourthly, Quo Vadis, where do we go to from here? Do we go out into the sand dunes of planets and stars and satellites and moons and search? Or do we make this place our eternal home for as long as we can live here? And fifthly, why do we have to suffer pain with it all? None of these questions, ladies and gentlemen, are being addressed sincerely and with depth by philosophy, science, or religion. Tonight, I'm dealing with quantum states. No, I'm not a physicist, but I've had 14 years in the university's halls of learning, and I've picked up a little bit of what they're trying to get at. Two of our greatest scientists not quite of this century, but certainly of the last half of the 20th century, two of our scientists, Albert Einstein and Niels Bohr, two of them were in conflict about quantum theory. They were great friends, had been friends for years and years and years, and yet between themselves argued over the matter of whether quantum theory really was establishing itself as an honest science. This is what Einstein said of it all. The quantum theory to me reminds me of a system of delusions and an exceedingly intelligent paranoia holding these delusions, concocted off incoherent elements of thought. He thought that the whole matter of quantum theory was reminiscent of a schizophrenic. And many of the physicists today who don't want to get away from Newtonian physics, many of them today still think that the world of quantum states is something to do with, well, like psychedelic drugs, you know. It's unreal, even though experiments are showing again and again and again and again that quantum states exist and can be proved so. No, there is this disarray. Opposing Einstein, though friendly with him all his life, Niels Bohr, a Dane, an aristocrat Dane, who won high honors in science, thought differently. He believed that quantum theory was not fully understood, that it was incomplete, but it was valid. And when this man came towards the end of his life, he chose an emblem. He was an aristocrat, and he chose an emblem for his crest. And the emblem, ladies and gentlemen, and the emblem was the yin-yang. Stick, please. Oh, thank you. A fourth religion brought to the surface by quantum. And quantum states, in my opinion, are going to answer some of these questions and settle some of these disputes that I introduced you to this lecture with. His emblem, the yin-yang, suggests many things. No doubt many of you are Buddhists and understand its implications. It relates to will and love working together. Will and love working together. But there is something very important here tonight for you to note, and that is, if this is a particle, this is its ghost form. If this is a particle, whether it's an electron, whether it's a photon, whether it's an atom or a proton or a neutron, they all have got shadows to them. And that's where theosophy comes into the matter. And so off he went, emblazoning his shield with the crest of the yin-yang. Coming down to our levels, what are we concerned with today? I've chosen just a few fragmentary examples of problems that we are faced with, especially those of us who are interested in the esoteric sciences. Heart implants. The psychological effect of a recipient of heart muscle receiving from the donor, who has, of course, been killed in an accident or something, and then beginning to take on the psychological expressions, the psychological traits of the donor, brought again and again to the public's attention. Another matter, stem cells. Stem cells, which have the ability to be implanted in the brain in order to regenerate brain cells that have become defunct, or in muscle, or in liver, or in skin, in any part of the body, indicating something they have not yet understood, and that stem cells are probably ensouled, enlivened, by a very, very, very ancient law and procedure of nature to be able to service different parts of the body. Not being born as liver cells or brain cells, neurons, but being able to be a reserve, enabling us who have talked about immortality to be able to say, ah, there at least is an anatomical pointer that to live 1,000 years, or 800, or 6, or 5, or 2, or 100 years is possible. Not only that, it can be incorporated into our way of life. If medicine can take it up, and medicine, God help them, they need money to do the research, and they have to fight against prejudice, religious prejudice, scientific prejudice, philosophical prejudice, in order to show that these stem cells can do their job. And I take you back to another problem, another question, another query that has dogged me for so many years. Mars has got two moons, Phobos and Deimos. Is that Phobos and Deimos? Two moons. They were spoken of by the Jonathan Swift, who wrote Gulliver's Travels. How did he know 200 years before they were actually seen by a telescope that Mars had two moons? But he did. And some of the things that I will put to you tonight will illustrate for you how important quantum can be in solving such matters. There's also phenomena going on in the world of physics. Two gold atoms can be fired at each other, come together in collision, and instead of shattering, they pass through each other. And we have pictures to illustrate this. How? The only explanation is in quantum theory. Atoms, gold atoms passing through each other. And then closer to home, we have the subject of WASAC. WASAC moon. Pointed out by Alice Bailey, she said she had been given the information about the WASAC moon and should do something about it on the Earth. The period of WASAC is when the sun is in Scorpio. The sun is in Taurus and the moon is in Scorpio. And when this occurs at the time of that full moon, when this occurs, an extraordinary opportunity arises for the spiritual intelligentsia of the world to make an effort to establish something that would change the spiritual outlook and progress of mankind thereafter. These are just some of the weird phenomena. Now, I'm going to ask my staff, please, to put up item two. And we come now to consider some of the nature, and don't forget, the quantum physicists are trying to pin, quite rightly probably, trying to pin quantum phenomena on the laws of nature now. The laws of nature are producing these extraordinary phenomena. And the first thing that I must point out, and it's in all the science papers, don't for one moment thinking I'm speaking as an isolated individual. One of the things I must point out is what is known as the ghost effect of all particles. There is no particle, according to quantum states, quantum physics today, there is no particle that has not got somewhere, has not got a shadow. Not a shadow, but they couldn't describe it, so they called it a ghost. Science is running out of terms, good English terms, to describe the extraordinary phenomena that are coming out in quantum physics. A good example of this is it Richard Dawkins? And the selfish gene, for God's sake, what is that? If a gene is part of biochemistry, and you are telling us now, scientists, that the best way you can describe this particular gene is that it's selfish. It is psychologically selfish. Yes, they're finding it very difficult in their restricted scientific language to describe the phenomena that are coming to light. What we do know and what they agree with is that all things, any particle, especially the particles that are subatomic, particles a million times smaller than the hydrogen nucleus, which we equate with emotional substance and emotional particles, and particles a million times smaller than the hydrogen nucleus, which we have equated in theosophy with mental substance, mental atoms, out of which we can fashion thoughts, thought forms, Every one of us can produce thought forms. What are they made of? Ah, well, you have to put that down in terms of atoms and molecules and forces and energies if you want to get anywhere with it. Theosophy couldn't do it because we hadn't got the language then and did our best. But this is the principle that I'm now illustrating, which we must go along with. Here it says an electron reveals wave and particle properties. So this is a picture derived from emissions of an electron. In theosophy, the electron, of course, is the Anu. Or if it's Babbitt, it's the, what did he call it? The ultimate physical atom. An electron takes part in electrical phenomena in the world and in your body and the nervous system, is really made up of two parts. It has a particle, which is its centrally illustrated region here, and the rest of it is waves. And you will find, as we develop the theme, it is impossible to photograph the particle, to draw the particle, to register it, to measure it, as well as the waves. The two cannot be done together. We have a particle detector that can do the particle part of the job, and we have a wave detector that can do the wave part of the job and register it. But put the two together, no, you can't get it. And people like myself, on the fringe of science, who are deep into theosophy and eternal truths and mysticism, we say to ourselves, yes, but isn't this like man? Is man not a physical particle when he's an incarnation? And is not the rest of him, the shadow of him, the ghosts of him, the astral body, the mental body, his spiritual nature, aren't they all in wave? Aren't they the non-particular part of man? We are no different. And the shaking part of it all is that what you study in quantum physics, although it applies and is easily to prove in terms of microorganisms, in terms of minute particles, is being shown to apply to macro physics, to the macro world, to you and to me. We have ghosts to us. We have a shadow nature to us, which theosophy alone probably has stood out ahead of any other discipline to prove to the world. And so this is important, this particular drawing. I'm going to ask my staff now to put up the next drawing. Oh, before you do that, let me just say this. No, do it. Do it. Thank you. You understand that this is not a lecture that can be just read off. It is something that I have to probe as I go along and to probe you, because one of the extraordinary things is, aggravating everything, is that the person who does the experiment in quantum physics changes the experiment by his action of being the measurer, his action of being the intervener, the person who's setting it up. And therefore, they have to examine the experimenter to see whether he is biased, whether he is for this, whether he is afflicted, colorblind, whatever it is, because it is the experimenter affects these tiny particles, like electrons. And especially photons. Now, scientists groping for a word to describe these ghost particles, this ghost state of a particle, I should say, have used the term fuzz. F-U-Z-Z. Well, I suppose it was originally intended as tongue-in-the-cheek, but to them, That's what it was in the beginning. All this around the particle was fuzz. Waves, certainly. Waves you could pick up with a wave detector, certainly. But the best word they could come up was ghost images or fuzz, and so on. You and I know about this fuzz. We know that every single thing, an atom, a molecule, a cell, a plant, an animal, a human, all have fuzz. And the fuzz is something we know more about at this stage anyway, and we must keep it like that, more about than science itself, the fuzz part. Let me give you an illustration from my own life. As you will have to if you're going to look into quantum physics, you're going to have to scratch through your life for experiences which confirm or reject what you're being confronted with. When I began to have the ability to move into the astral world, out of body state, if you like, that's what it's called today, I discovered strange things which today have quantum meaning. One of them was that if I visited or was in an old house or monument or something of antiquity, it had a substantial astral form. But put up a brand new house next door with bricks, brand new bricks and cement, and has no astral body. It hasn't been lived in. It hasn't had emotional energies projected into the walls of these new plastered bricks and so on. Eventually it will. And that's why many esotericists choose to live in old houses, because they have substantial structures in terms of what scientists call fuzz nature. I've lived a long time, and I have spent a lot of that time investigating. I was part of the team that worked with the Delaware Laboratories. Some of the highest-born individuals in the country supported the Delaware Laboratories. I was newly graduated out of medical school, and I gave my services free, and I became their medical advisor, medical director. And I was confronted with friends of mine with extraordinary phenomena which fall today, 30 years later, under the heading of quantum fuzz. I was able to see, for instance, photographed by the extraordinary camera, the aconite seed of homeopathy, the aconite seed given warmth, water, and oxygen, begin to produce, with photographic confirmation, produce a fuzz image of the plant that it's going to grow into. And those pictures are available today, deep, deep down in the libraries, but also somewhere amongst all the paraphernalia of my own home. So aconite could show, given the three essentials of biology, a development of a shadow into which its shape indicated it would grow. Same thing with chestnuts. Chestnuts growing after they had been taken from the trees, extraordinary shapes that they would develop into. And when you look into it, not only was there a shadow, a fuzz of the whole human body, but there was fuzz to do with any part of your body. Your blood cells had a fuzz, a blood smear taken from a patient had a fuzz which could be analyzed, or his saliva, or his semen, or any part of the body could reflect the same fuzz as the total body had. Of course it was difficult. Of course it produced one of the great court cases in the High Court of England, where the whole matter of the Delaware Laboratory's propositions of fuzz and their ability to treat a person according to the fuzz that his blood smear showed came up in court. The Delawares won their case, much to the chagrin of the medical profession. So we're looking at strange things. Fuzz. Fuzz around what other things? We had, in theosophy, we had a great clairvoyant, Geoffrey Hodgson, who had the ability to detect the fuzz that was the angel of a mountain, the fuzz that was the deva of a particularly beautiful tree, that produced his version. His version was eventually painted and presented to us in a book called The Kingdom of the Gods. The angel, the angelic, fuzz, angelic entity hovering over a healing clinic. Have you never taken your own pets to a healing clinic, to a vet, and notice the change that comes over them the moment they come into the sanctuary of the veterinary clinic? They know, they detect, and there is, according to theosophy, there are healing entities who assist in the whole process of medicine. We're into them. Not we, but science is into that kind of thing. And that's what we must be alert to. The devas of trees and the devas of cathedrals. This particular picture comes to me through a friend, Professor Scott Olson, which is a picture of the rose window of Chartres Cathedral. Many of you here will have visited Chartres Cathedral, and the central factor in Chartres Cathedral is the rose window. If you have a close look at this picture in the break, you will find that there are quantum fuzz marks passing across the whole picture. This is the guy that did the photograph, and he has called the picture the Spirit of Shot. But there's something else here. This is a 12-petaled rose window. 12 petals in yoga, in Hindu philosophy, in Hindu sacred teachings, represents the heart chakra, a 12-petaled lotus. Particularly the site today of development in the subrace of the future, which will open up the heart chakra in humanity. But look, if you have a chance, look at this rose window and see what is coming out of the petals in this particular picture, which I had no hand in. You will see strange forms, which aren't strange at all. You will see pyramidal shapes. You will see cuboidal shapes coming out of it. You will see globes, of course. You will see pentagons and hexagons. And they are emerging, and you can see them in the picture here. What are they? According to Plato, shape, form, ideas come out from the shadow part of the sun. The shadow part, the fuzz part of the sun. And these come out into the world, and they produce what was known is known today as the five Platonic solids and many others, but they also produce ideas. You might say, well, how are the two linked? Well, let me just give you an indication in terms of correlations and of esoteric sites. The cuboid structure is related to the cube of salt particles. NaCl, sodium chloride. six-sided cube, of course. But sodium chloride is dehydrating. It helps to dry the fish. The sodium chloride is related to satin, which is a dehydrating factor. And so you have the extension of these forms into the world of the psychological. And every one of you, if you brought me a horoscope, no, please don't. If you brought me your horoscope, I could tell you what the significance of Saturn or this particular emanation from the center of Sun is in terms of the cuboid structure. Chart, can we have the other picture up, please? This is calculated to show you that the scientists themselves, the mystics, by the way, the scientists themselves are involved. Einstein said, I'm a mystic at heart. And to me, the most wonderful experience anyone can have is mystical. And he sought for a divine, a God, that could acknowledge his beautifully designed universe. This picture here is a very famous scientist's impression, not of a 12-petaled lotus of consciousness, the 12-petaled lotus of the heart, which is humility, empathy, mercy, not the 12-petaled lotus of the rose window, but the 16-petaled lotus of personality, the 16-petaled lotus of the throat chakra, which integrates and helps to manage by of intelligence the throat qualities, and we are, most of us, at the throat stage or getting just beyond it. And according to the scientists, each one of us has our own reality. And our reality is ours, idiosyncratic. My interpretation of the world as I see it conveys a reality for me, or for you, or you, whatever your bias, whatever your prejudice, whatever your attitude, you decide the reality. Einstein didn't like that at all. Most of the physicists today don't like it. But this particular scientist shows streams of information coming in through the different paths of the senses and how there is a personality structure holding them together. Do you know who he is? Do you know who the scientist is? Stephen Hawking. Just ahead, put it up, please. Stephen Hawking. Just ahead, barely able to register what he has to say on computers to make it available to the world. If you said to me, is there anybody you can think of who might be part of Shambhala? Not just the hierarchy of the planet, which is unknown still, but the higher place, the place where the will of God is known. And if you asked me who might be part of Shambhala on Earth in physical form, I would say this guy is, because he's talking about the same thing, but in a different language, the language of science, and not just quantum physics, but he also speaks in the language of Newtonian physics. And so you and I do not find the concept of fuzz unacceptable. It's been part of our lives as thinking people, as a, if we may use the term, a spiritual intelligentsia of the world, to interpret these waves. What are we saying here? We're saying that a particle, even in the phenomenon of a light wave, there's a light wave, the light wave, has photons, which are particles of light. And so light is a wave with particles in it. And Einstein discovered that, and others confirmed it, that all particles have waves. Photon is the tiniest one we can think of. And so the photon as a wave is not different from the photon as a particle. They are the same thing. They can be in two different places at once, but you can't register the particle and the wave together. Can you register a human being in a physical body and the fuzz, the aura of the human being as well? Some people get a glimpse of it, but in general we don't. So there are many things here that we have to bear in mind when we look at the world in the eyes of quantum. A particle and a wave are part of the same thing. So may we have the drawing number 5, please. Someone on top, that's helpful. Yes, just get it up as quick as you can, so I don't lose my audience. Life is hard and cruel when you're old. Yes. So, we're saying here, the world of quantum physics, which we're beginning to dip ourselves into, we are fashioning, we call it, a third eye. A third eye that is to interpret these waves, these different states of consciousness, and will develop and develop and develop until man can live in both worlds and sense in both worlds. Not that we should live in this world less, but we should learn to live in both worlds more. That's the challenge. Nothing frightening here. This is a source of light, and this is a slit in a barrier, and this is the particle detector, and this particular source is a photon particle detector. And so the photons of light, this part of the wave, this part of the wave can be detected quite easily in a stream, in what is known as a particle detector. Fine. Nobody wanted to say, nobody in 100 years ago, God, is it really 100 years already? 100 years ago when Sir Oliver Lodge, the greatest chemist, English chemist of his day, said, there's no such thing as a vacuum. The vacuums that you made at school were not vacuums at all. Vacuums contain all kinds of energies as a kind of medium through which light is able to travel. He was laughed at and ridiculed. And it didn't help that he was at that time materializing with the help of ectoplasm. He was materializing something of the fuzz of a human form. You put it all together if you can. The history of theosophy is a wonderful history, even if it has got a bit of spiritualism mixed up with it. Now we come to look at a photon, observing a photon with a wave detector. Remember what I said, you can't get a similar picture of the particle and the wave. You can register the particle with a particle detector, and you can register the wave with a wave detector, but not the two together. That's essential. When you start to apply that to bigger structures than the photon, it gets complicated. But this is terribly important. I wouldn't pester you with it if it weren't. Here we have a photon approaching two slits made in a barrier. And the photon is directed at the center between the two slits. And it goes through the slits as waves. And the wave of the proton, the wave of the proton, this is a wave detector, is split in two, so that out of the one wave before the slits, out of the one wave come two waves. Now, the important part. The two waves come out, and they overlap as they come out. They overlap, and they cause what is known as an interference. And the interference is with each other. Hold this in your mind. Your higher self will interfere with you. And you and your higher self will produce interference patterns which will help to explain some of the extraordinary mystical and, well, quantum experiences that lie ahead of you. So this is here for a purpose. And so this is an experiment that can be produced very simply. Photons are projected towards a screen that has two slits, and a wave detector is measuring it. And the wave detector shows that the waves of the photon come through the two slits. They are separated, but meet up with each other and interfere with each other. And this, ladies and gentlemen, is the interference pattern. You've got notebooks, write it down. The interference pattern. Photons of light pass in through the slits. What slits? These two. The two pupils of the eyes. We take photons in through the pupils of our eyes. And the immense interference patterns of the energies that are coming into the eyes are somehow apprehended by the brain, not as particles. The brain understands them, learns to understand them through wave formation. We call it electrical wave. Doesn't matter. I'm trying to show you that many of the ancient traditions of how to unfold yourself can be discovered in the new unfolding factor of quantum. Have you never stood on a seashore in which there is a high bank and the waves come in and reach the bank and they slop over and come back again and meet the waves that are coming in? And where the waves meet, there is a peak. And where the two waves don't meet at all, there is a trough. And that is what occurs in this phenomenon of producing, as we call it, interference patterns. And that is illustrated there. Not easy, but this is what I have to tell you about. That's nothing. That's absolutely nothing. That's the basic foundation of quantum theory, but it's not telling you the most important things, because out of the interference patterns of two entities taken from the microcosmic world of photons up to human beings, out of the interference pattern of two beings comes wonderful, staggering developments in consciousness, without which initiation is just not possible. And what arises from all this is that when you intermingle two or more microscopic particles so that they merge so much that they lose their individuality and they share each other's nature, I'll have some of that there, that over here. Eventually, they are a single entity. If you take A and mix it with B under certain quantum rules, they become entangled. That's the word. Go away tonight with nothing else except the word entanglement. Because that is the basis of the laws of quantum physics, and it is the basis of those strange laws that we never understood, just as theosophists, and that was the laws of nature. What do I mean? Let me show you. This is an entity. It can be a subatomic particle, A. Or it can, I shouldn't say this, but I'm saying it in anticipation. Or it could be a human being, if it makes it easier for you to understand. And this is B. Distinct individuals with their own properties, their own qualities, their own nature. Somehow or the other, if you add one to the other, like the two waves that I've just talked about, of photon waves, and they interfere with each other in strange ways, which we're coming to and so on, then A and B become a single entity. They become a single entity, and therefore I'm going to ring it around. That's not a single entity. That's that one and that's that one. But when you ring them around, because of their interference patterns with each other, they become a greater being. The single entity becomes what we call superpositioned. Yeah, well, I haven't pestered you with too many long words, but that's one you're going to have to remember. Superpositioned. Superpositioned. And that is an extraordinary state, because out of it, things arise. When things are superpositioned in this way, two particles, microcosmic particles, yes, macrocosmic particles, like you and me and nations, like Czechoslovakia was, when they are engaged so that they function as one entity, it is called entanglement. Now this is the importance coming up. I can take one of these, not those, one of these entangled particles from this entity. It could be from there, it could be from there, it could be from there, any part of that entity. I can take part of it, and that is part of the entanglement, and another part of it can be on the moon. Wherever the two particles are that are entangled, they are a single entity. They are a single entity. And each particle will demonstrate exactly what the other demonstrates. Even though one particle is on the other side of the universe, and one makes up part of your brain. No wonder the quantum physicists fell back on Einstein. Just, no, I can't take it. But it's being proved. Entanglement. So that two particles can become entangled. The intermingling of two or more microscopic particles so that they lose their individuality and in many ways behave as a single entity. Straight out of New Scientist. Can't help it. It's there. It's in the science, leading science papers. Entanglement. Nasty word. It came from Schrödinger, German. And German, this German Schrödinger discovered entanglement. And he gave it a German word, which was acceptable and very nice for the Germans. But entanglement to us has a very different meaning. It implies helplessness in the face of knotty conditions. Nobody likes to think they are entangled by that description. It doesn't mean that at all. But that's the word that has grown up for this condition, entanglement, especially if you're divorced, as McCartney would probably tell you, and as O.J. Simpson should also tell you. Entanglement is a very beautiful thing when you apply it to the macrocosmic world. I was entangled in the war. Who with? My buddies. I had to stand with them in extreme danger. They were the only thing that existed in my life because there was death at every point. And we bayonet charged together. And he guarded my rear and I guarded his rear. And this is still the case in Afghanistan, where friendships are formed under extreme danger and threat. And they produce entanglement. You are naturally entangled with your children. Let me tell you why. Sperm, ovum, male, female, egg. And the two are brought together to produce genes and chromosomes. What science does not understand yet is that there is an emotional fuzz. There's an emotional fuzz to the sperm and to the ovum. And they are in microscopic particles. And there is a mental part to them as well, not as prominent at this stage of our evolution. And it is when A plus B meet that you have the extraordinary qualities traits of a new child who is forming his own superpositioning. And that is not the end of it. The most extraordinary thing about bilocation is, the most extraordinary thing about non-locality. It means this, that two particles are engaged, are entangled, their qualities, this is Douglas Baker, he lives in a physical body, he has a mind, and their physical body, their qualities, their traits, become intimate. Non-locality of particles. It means this, if I can jump ahead and talk now about bioentanglement. By bioentanglement, I mean taking microparticles and extending them to macroparticles and living particles like a human being. What does this all mean? It means that we can convey through an interconnectedness between the particle that you are endowed with a particle you may have been entangled with in a previous life. Permanent that. That's what it said to me, shrieked at me. We call it atavism. That we may have existed in a previous life somewhere on the planet, somewhere else, perhaps on Venus, the fourth round of Venus, which is now in its fifth round. And the particles that were established then, that you were entangled with then, may have become separated. We replace everything in our bodies every 2 years, every atom, every molecule in the body is completely replaced, as we know scientifically, in 2 years. And so we are constantly losing even if it's not through mental and emotional radiation, we are allowing part of the entangled atoms within us to go out into common circulation. This means that the theosophical teaching of the permanent atom holds validity if reincarnation is accepted. If reincarnation is accepted because quantum teaches that time, not just space, not one entangled particle being on the other side of the moon responding to each other, but time is involved. Going back in time, we are entangled with particles that we may have been involved with in previous lives. Sorry, it's in black and white. Just let me slow down a bit. Bioentanglement arises when the phenomenon shifts into the world of living things. The interconnectedness of entangled microcosmic particles can extend beyond the photon pair into the macrocosmic state, not microcosmic particles, but into macrocosmic state. How far can this go? Alice Bailey, who, as we know, was overshadowed by a very high master figure, Alice Bailey applied it to nations. She wrote a book called The Destiny of Nations, and she suggested that bioentanglement can exist in nations as well as in atoms, as well as in stars, as well as in galaxies, as far as you like to go. Entanglement. So what we're saying here is that the bioentanglement that you could become involved in, there have been, every one of you, the bioentanglement that you have become involved in may arise in which you share a period with somebody, a period of danger, which I've just described to you, a period of ecstasy. It may be with psychedelics, I don't know. It may be in sexuality, a period of ecstasy in which two of you involved, you share. Swedenborg called it conjugal relationships, where two people absolutely in love become entangled in copulation and the ecstasy of it, the uniqueness of it for them, produces entanglement. Swedenborg. I hope I don't get shot by the Swedenborg Society. Now I must take you a little further. What is the history of your permanent atom? Your permanent atom has got entangled particles from every one of your lives. And they feed back into this life. One of the ways in which they feed back is the extent to which your chakras will open in this life, according to the efforts undergone in previous lives. In the spiritual disciplining of previous lives, will decide how far you can open a chakra in this life. Common knowledge in yoga. The matter of bioentanglement. Simple examples I must give you, and I'm going to give you. Can you clear the board so that I've got more paper, Joe? Thank you. All right. Let me get on with it. When I went to Natal University and was taught English there, my professor was a Professor Sneddon, a wonderful woman, who all her life was surrounded with young students. And these students were part and parcel of her life. She lived for them, taught for them. She was the warden of their residence. And she retained some of their youth. This is Madame Blavatsky talking now. She retained some of the youth of those that she grew up with, that she taught, that she aged with. And she has only just died, 97. Creative to the end. And so the general application of bioentanglement suggests that it might be possible to arrange your life in such a way that you can be of greater service to mankind, to beings higher than man. We don't know. In other words, you may have entangled particles in you which were once part of a saint. And your responses to the esoteric disciplines would be greatly affected by the fact that you have entanglement with a being like the Buddha, who went on into the fifth and sixth rounds, or a Plato, and would be responsible for many of the aspirations that we feel in our desire to meditate. Meditation, Ajna Center. Service to mankind, Alta Major Center. The use of the will, thousand-petaled lotus. The three lotuses involved in spiritual entanglement. We'll come to that in a moment. Let me show you some of the experiments that I, well, one or two of them anyway. I met a guy called Clive Baxter. Clive Baxter was a man experimenting with lie detectors. And the United States government was naturally interested in what he produced. He had a chymograph, which means a rotating drum, in which any response from somebody telling a lie or a truth would be measured on the chymograph. But he was having lunch one day in his workshop in New York, and he had one of these machines like that with a chymograph, and he went out and decided he was going to have some brine shrimps for lunch. So he bought a packet of brine shrimps. And when he got back to the office, he put half of them in one beaker, and the other half in the other beaker, and this lot were wired. He then heated the brine shrimps for lunch, and he found that the moment the heat was applied to the brine shrimps, these ones, unconnected, responded immediately, and the chymograph shot up. Their entangled, bio-entangled species was under threat. And there was no possible way, in terms of 40 years ago, for an explanation for there to be a connection between the two, that these were shouting for help or whatever. But the response was there. That can be explained today easily with quantum theory, that there is interconnectedness between those who are conjoined, those who are entanglement, there is an interconnectedness. And what they've found is that this interconnectedness cannot be shielded. You can't shove a shield there. You can't shove a shield there and stop these brine shrimps from getting any response. Doesn't matter. And what is more, the response is faster than light. All right, if you like, as fast as light, but no light is involved. What does this imply? What does it imply? It implies for you and me, tangled up in the future of this planet, dedicated to help where we can, a non-locality, an understanding of non-locality, which can produce strange things. The word I'm coming to now is teleportation. It means, ladies and gentlemen, in the future it is feasible for us to take astronauts and implant or give them entangled particles that we have in our laboratory, and they can go out into space 1,000,000 miles, a light year away, and we can communicate instantaneously with them by doing things to these atoms which will produce an interconnectedness with the entangled atoms that they are carrying with them. Now, you can't argue out of it. This is what the hullabaloo is all about. The experiments are showing it all the time. Yes, 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 yes. But they can't explain it. The scientists, the quantum physicists today can't explain the phenomena that are unfolding all the time. Absolutely bewildering. And that's why you're not getting so many popular books on quantum physics. All sorts of suggestions. Teleportation. What might we be able to send suddenly? First of all, we can communicate with an astronaut 1,000,000 miles away instantaneously through these entangled atoms. He's got some, we've got some. We can communicate. If he communicates with us, he can tell us, I have an illness. These are my signs and symptoms. Please tell me what to do. We will be able to do something to his entangled atoms that we've got, like give a prescription and sulfur and sodium and chlorine and this and that. And not only can we say what he needs, but we can change the entangled atoms here so that the entangled atoms there will produce sodium, produce chlorine, produce whatever is required for him to treat himself. Staggering. Absolutely staggering. And nobody can talk about it. You've been very kind tonight to listen to me. I thought I'd have a hell of a time here. So, teleporting. Let me give you another example. That's all I can do. You won't find them in science books yet, but you'll see the research for them. Let me talk about, I want drawing number 7 up, please. Wake up. Number 7. What? You're not screaming for a break already, are you? Okay. I live the life quietly of an occultist. By that, I say that I take the hidden laws of nature, and I've always said this, I take the hidden laws of nature and I apply them to my own life as best I can. One of the things that I happen to have done in the last 40, 50 years is to give lectures. More than 15,000 of them around the globe. The way in which I give lectures was originally and still is today, as friends and staff of mine will tell you, is to write the lecture out, correct it, alter it, before it goes for typing, and so on, to write it out. And I always became extraordinarily aware that when I had written something down in pencil, graphite, that somehow or the other written down like that, I could pick it up and speak as I am now. Not reading it word for word, but to be able to speak straight away, say what is in that manuscript that I had written out in lead pencil. Now there is a scientific explanation for it if you're accepting quantum. Carbon has an incredible ability to range from being thick and as sharp and hard as a diamond, all the way down through buckyballs and goodness knows what, down to a single layer of carbon cells forming rings. And we call these not graphite rings, but graphene rings. And when we write a manuscript in pencil, haven't worked it out in ink, but in pencil, we are laying down a layer of carbon atoms that are one atom thick. The layer is one atom thick, but they're in rings, and the notable thing about them is, did you put gray in here, Joe? It's in here somewhere. The wonderful thing about the graphite is that it has fuzz. It has fuzz. The rings have got fuzz, which means all crystals have got fuzz, and the graphene has fuzz, which means wavicular nature. And when I write on here, if I write Douglas, if I write Douglas onto in graphene onto a piece of paper, I organize the waves not with a handwriting only, it's my mental application of what I'm writing that changes the waves so that somehow or the other they copy Douglas Baker in his writing. And so for me, writing with a crystal structure, only one layer thick of carbon rings of graphene, means that I somehow or the other establish with my brain, even with my feelings, I establish some ability to exist in interconnectedness. And when I come to lecture, I'm interconnected with that piece of manuscript that I have put together for a lecture. And out it comes. It's not my job to give you what do you call these damn things in mathematics? Equations. The moment the scientists put equations in their books, they can't sell them. Because people are not prepared to have their consciousness described as an equation. And who can blame them? Now we therefore must understand that things pick up. If you are a creative person, and there are many who are just not creative at all, and I'm going to say a terrible, terrible thing, and it is this, I believe that preoccupation with the computer that does all the creativeness itself deprives the individual of his creative capacities. Sorry. I have found that to be a fact. So what happens then when a person begins to put down in pigment, not in writing, begins to put down in pigment what he is seeing impressionistically, if you like, or in any other way. There it is, it's in pigment in a painting. Well, there was an individual called Dr. Oscar Brunler. And Dr. Oscar Brunler found that he could apply a device for interpreting the amount of fuzz produced out of the pigment, out of the sculpture, out of the writings of creative people. And Dr. Oscar Brunler gave his life to this. He called the measurement that he was making, and he didn't know that he was affecting the measurement, his bias of liking or not liking Shakespeare or Leonardo da Vinci affected his result. Nevertheless, he was getting results indicating that works created by an artist give off waves that he measured in terms of degrees biometric. Put it up, will you? Next one. This is old hat. You'll find all this in my book, The Opening of the Third Eye. Not the quantum. No, not yet. And these were some of the figures that were suggested. Average man scored about 350 degrees biometric. There was Joshua Reynolds, who would be this guy, his pigments in paintings producing radiations, 586. Giotto, the drawer of Florence and all that, 654, and so on. All the way down, Leonardo da Vinci, 725, top the list of creativeness from their works. I didn't have much to do with the Bible, but I do remember, by your works shall ye be known. And even Shakespeare, who wasn't Shakespeare, it was Richardson, the yeoman that lived near to Shakespeare. Even in Shakespeare, you will find that Richardson, who wrote the plays, and Shakespeare sold them and acted in them in London. Richardson, who wrote, said to the inspirer of his sonnets, "You will live on in these sonnets. You will be famous because of these sonnets." And we pass immortality on to our progeny. And our own immortality in the works that we create is the Parthenon, not the creation of magnificent sculptors. The Parthenon in Athens, one of the great gemstones in the diadem of humanity, the Parthenon. Chartres Cathedral, its rose window, and all supported by United Nations funds to ensure that these treasures of mankind never be lost. Yes, indeed. Oscar Brunner, marvelous person. Explanation for it. Well, the explanation for it is that, put it up, please, the next one, I'm sorry. A tremendous amount of work put into this. Number nine. You'll find this in the little book. Now, don't forget, you cannot understand a subatomic particle unless you can get at its waves. That's something important. Not from the particle itself. Yes, how much energy it's got, how fast it's traveling, yes. But the quality of anything, subatomic, and is in the waves that it is giving off. That's science. That's quantum physics. That's what it's saying. The human brain has two nerves which are outside the brain. And these are the optic nerves connecting up, crossing over with the two hemispheres of the brain. When I look forward straight with my two eyes, my optic nerves to each of the eyes connecting with the brain are pointing outwards. I can take a pencil and there's a blind spot there where the optic nerve is shielding. But if I begin to focus my attention on writing, or sculpturing, or painting, I bring my optic nerves from outwards to the front, and the optic nerves are pouring out energy. They are part of the brain. The optic nerves are part of the brain, and they are pouring out energy, and the energy is going. Someone here, for instance, who loves to write out things because it does something for him and contains these wonderful energies which are part of the creative act. Now, with the optic nerves brought to the front, this energy from the brain, which is in waves, is being pushed into what the person is painting or drawing. This is the basis of Oskar Brunner. But there's another factor. There's another factor. And the other factor is that in the midbrain, there's the third ventricle, and there is the pineal gland. There's the pineal gland. And the pineal gland's full of crystals. In a highly developed person, the pineal gland is full of crystals. And the pineal gland casts a light out, waves, if you like, which become entangled through the slits, the pupils of the eye, but added to it is what we call the Ajna chakra. The Ajna chakra. And this adds to the ordinary optic nerve radiations, it adds the quality, somehow, God knows, of Atma Buddhi and Manas. The pineal gland's secret is that it is able to apprehend, receive, what the Romans called the nine muses. The muse for painting, the muse for sculpturing, the muse for this and for that. This is what I'm talking about. The muses were gods. And he was visited by his muse and wrote this long poem and so on. We say that that visitation comes by means of the light-sensitive pineal gland that can pick up light even though it's deeply embedded inside the brain. And it can, in creative acts, cast light out. It can cast light out, and it does, and it casts light out, and the light is entangled, and there's the work of art. But at the same time, in creative art, it is affecting the Ajna center. I'm not going to go into all this, how it's done and so on, but these drawings are there, and you can examine them in the future. I would add to this something very obvious. Take that off, will you? And that is that if this is the third ventricle of the brain, and that is the vaginal quality of the brain, Madame Blavatsky said, in which the egg of genius is implanted in the uterus of the brain, then there's the higher triad of Atma, Buddhi, and abstract thought, or Manas, and this passes down, and touches the Ajna center, passes out through the eyes, and helps to create the world's marvels. Speculation? No. It's all there, if you want that kind of confirmation.